Hello and welcome to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson, a podcast for those seeking the ultimate in wine, food, and travel. Each week, she interviews winemakers, chefs, celebrities, and a variety of guests that shape the way we enjoy life.
Good morning from sunny Napa Valley. This is Ilona Thompson with Palate Exposure. I'm here today with Kiel Anderson. You actually may be drinking his wines without even realizing it. I know I have. He's quite a prolific consultant and very highly desired, and he also makes his own brand. I'm very lucky to be talking to him this morning because he has lots of insight on viticulture, winemaking, as well as marketing. So we'll get to know him this morning and taste some wines in the process. I'm very excited about it. So I guess we'll start with the most basic question, Kiel. First of all, nice to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ilona.
Thank you. And where were you born?
Where was I born? I was born in San Diego, California. So specifically in La Jolla. So originally born in Southern California, but I only stayed there for about a year. Grew up in Portland, Oregon, and then back down to California to the Bay Area, and I grew up in the Bay Area pretty much for the rest of my, until I was in high school. Bounced around a lot. My dad was is a surgeon, an eye surgeon, and he originally settled in the Cupertino area, and then we moved up to Sonoma County to Santa Rosa.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm pretty much a California boy through and through.
So, you know, I think that in that of itself is so cool because you kind of grew up with California sunshine, and it's just a different way of being. And
Sonoma, it's a bubble, let me tell you.
Yeah. It's Sonoma County.
It's a beautiful bubble, but yeah, you go away and you realize how fortunate we are to be here.
Yeah.
I just got back from a trip to France, which was absolutely amazing.
En Premier.
Yeah. En Premier, Bordeaux, and all over through many different regions. But it was amazing and lovely. But then you come back to California, and it's like, whoa, we're fortunate to live here.
I think that's an important sentiment. For those of you that are listening in other states, we love everybody, but we are very spoiled, is what I like to say, in California.
Yeah.
It's a really special place.
Yeah, and we're spoiled on the wine growing, wine making side as well.
Exactly. So there you are in Sonoma, surrounded by vines.
Yeah, I was in the middle of the wine industry, when I was in junior high school, just not really knowing a whole lot about the industry as a whole, even though I was living right in the middle of it. Being underage, I wasn't particularly interested in the industry that surrounded me, even though I was immersed in it, cleaning barrels for a summer for minimum wage. It was just, it was just in my environment. And when I went to Davis, I had no intention of going into the wine industry at all. I was more interested in science and possibly going into pre-med or something like that, just because I knew what I was good at and I didn't know what I wanted to do, like most kids, I would say, when they graduate high school.
Yes, no, I hear that, and yet you ended up choosing the path that...
Yeah, and it just happened just extremely randomly. I mean, I was in the sciences, I took all of my physics and my calculus and the science and the biology and all that kind of stuff, all my prerequisites. And I was working in a plant biology lab one of the summers that I stuck around for a summer session at school. And the grad student, Mark Krasnow, who is now in New Zealand anyways, a great guy, he says to me, Kiel, I was pipetting, I just finished like a 4-hour pipetting, marathon. We were studying DNA repair in plants, in Arabidopsis. Arabidopsis.
That's quite a word.
DNA repair. So anyways, I was pipetting for 4 hours in the middle of the summer, and he Christine says, Kale, you look totally miserable. You need to go check out the viticulture and enology program, because he was halfway in plant physiology, he was halfway in the viticulture program. So I said, okay, well, you know, I'll go check it out. I really respect Mark. And I took an introductory class, and I would say I was halfway bitten by the wine bug.
How about that?
I thought it was fascinating, kind of the crossover of, you know, of nature and culture and science and traveling. I just thought it was just such a cool kind of convergence of all sorts of things that I wanted to do. Or be involved with somehow career wise. But I said I was maybe halfway bitten because I wasn't sure whether terroir was, you know, a bunch of BS. Like, was this real? Or is this just all marketing jargon? Is there really something? Do I really love wine? Have I ever had a wine that just knocked my socks off? All this talk, is it just a bunch of smoke and mirrors, I guess? So then I joined a tasting group on campus, which was part of the student program, Devo, and started tasting 3 days a week with the student tasting group on campus. It didn't help. It also helped that at the time, you know, you could be under 21 and taste wine on campus. And there was also a wine barbecue class where, like, you know, a lot of, you know, attractive ladies went to that class. So
well,
it was like, okay,
right there.
there's all sorts of incentive to check out the program, and that's where I think I was fully bitten.
You know, it's so interesting to me, particularly from the perspective that we talked about, that you're kind of in this cusp of millennial, non-millennial, you know, by virtue of birth. But I think a lot of people at that age, you know, at the college age, are struggling. And what you said, I think, is really deserves highlighting. First of all, somebody else acknowledged, but you probably, I know how self-aware you are, knew that you were not happy. So it's important to listen to yourself and that inside voice that says, it doesn't feel right. It's not the right fit. And then you did something about it.
Right.
And then that's when you fully realized that is what I want to pursue.
Right. I mean, I think I was at a crossroads even. So it was really kind of a college experience story for me. I mean, I was at school not really knowing what or why or, you know, I had already taken a quarter off my sophomore year to go to teach snowboarding in Tahoe. You know, like I'd already, like, you know, I was already like, am I wasting my time here, type of thing. Like, why don't I go do something fun for a quarter, come back and, you know, kind of rededicate myself. And I had also gone to Alaska for a fishing trip in between my second and my third year. And it was at the same, all of this happened kind of simultaneously. One of my friends had just joined the student firefighter department and had encouraged me to apply for the student firefighter program. So I was just trying to figure out what I was going to do, why I needed to, I was just kind of going through a kind of a personal discovery. And thank God I was at Davis, because you know, not only are the people amazing at Davis, but also, like, there's a lot of different people from different backgrounds with different ideas that I was exposed to, and I somehow amazingly kind of fell into this community, this wine community, that I really started to really get passionate about. While I was at school. And I mean, I don't think this is any type of normal college experience that I had, but I had it, and I thank the Lord that I ended up there and that I found something that I wanted to do for the rest of my life. I don't think that's common anymore when you go to college.
No, and it's actually really refreshing to hear you talk about this critical thinking piece of it. I hold that value very dear, because once you start, you ask yourself a lot of questions. You took all the trips, you tried stuff. If you kind of default into something, you know, just feel this pressure to inhabit certain career path, unfortunately, once you're in it, it's much harder to get out.
Sure.
And then a lot of people are unhappy in their jobs, and let's face it, we spend a huge chunk of our lives at work. So if you don't enjoy it, it's a really sad thing.
Right.
But you, on the other hand, you said, hey, is this a fit for me? I'm going to try it on for size. And that's so important.
Well, it took me, you know, over 5 years to finish college, but I'm glad I did. I think if I went to just about any other university, I might not have finished, you know?
Yeah.
But I found something that I was passionate about, and I spent the last 2.5 years, you know, like really focused on what I was doing, which I'm just, again, just grateful that I had some really amazing people around me to help me.
Really cool. So you graduate with a degree in?
In viticulture and enology, yeah. Enology. So, you know, grape growing, winemaking. So, graduated in 02, started in 97, graduated 02, but, you know, I got my degree, and while I was at school, I did some amazing internships. And,
oh, yeah? Let's hear about those.
So I did an internship at J Wine Company in Healdsburg.
Oh, that's good bubbles.
Good bubbles. Learned all about the sparkling industry, which was fascinating. I love to drink bubbles. Realized that it was extremely hard and time-consuming and expensive to make bubbles. I don't currently make bubbles now. I'm sure I will eventually, but it was a fascinating experience because I was able to work the harvest and then make it back to school in the fall to finish my degree. So that was, you know, logistically, it worked out really well. I worked for Oded and Penny now, who is at Rack and Riddle, who does amazing bubbles and small lot bubbles too. So
that's exciting.
Yeah.
And it's such a, you know, it's one of the most difficult wines to make, if not the most difficult type of program.
Absolutely. I just got back from France, and I had one day to kill before flying out of Charles de Gaulle in Paris. So I took the TGV, I took the train to Champagne.
Nice.
So I spent a day in Champagne. I spent a day taking the tour through Tattinger, and came home with a bottle of Comte de Champagne, which is...
Nice.
It's just incredible, you know, the amount of time and effort and the amount of history, you know, there specifically. But yeah, I mean, you know, their current release of the Comte de Champagne was 2007. So it just reminded me, like, holy crap, like, you know.
This is art of patience.
Yeah, exactly. On a different time frame.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad you got to have this extraordinary experience, because I think you bring back, you know, different perspective when you travel. And it influences you in everything that you do.
For sure.
So you graduated in...
Graduated viticulture enology, Davis. I did the internship at J Wine Company. And then right after graduating, I decided to work at Colgan Cellars.
You decided to work, he just says casually, at Colgan Cellars. Well, it's a super call. How did that happen?
So at the time, you know, it wasn't, you know, as, I guess, well known. I guess it was well known, but it just wasn't as, you know, pervasive as it is now. I guess at the time, Colgan, this was right after Ann Colgan and Jeff Schrader had, I think, broken up and had split Colgan hyphen Schrader into Colgan.
That's right. No, I remember Schrader. That, actually, because I used to buy their wine.
Yeah. So they were custom crushing. Colgan was custom crushing at Laird Family, and my first job as their first intern was to bring all of the wines up to their new Pritchard Hill estate, you know, the number 9 property. And this is when Mark Aubert was the winemaker. Michelle Edwards was the assistant winemaker at the time, who I was friends with from school through some friends. So, you know, she was the first assistant winemaker, and I was the first intern at Colgan, and then we crushed the first vintage Colgan at their estate winery, you know, too, which is amazing. We made some fantastic wines. I learned a lot about the luxury side of the industry. You know, and Ann and Joe were amazing. They let me stay in one of their properties in Yountville, which was which is fantastic, and I learned so much. And I still have a lot of relationships and friends. You know, the godparents to my kids, Beverly Shotwell. She's still Beverly and Joe Shotwell. She still works for Ann. She was working for Ann before Colgan Sellers was a thing. Wow. As a personal assistant. So anyways, they're the godparents of my kids. So we have all, so it was an amazing experience, and we still have friends to this day from that experience. And
what a great choice. What made you decide? It was just kind of an opportunity.
Well, I knew that I wanted to work with Cabernet and Napa, specifically from mountain sites.
So you knew that in your mind?
Well, I'd done a lot of tasting when I was at Davis, and I was most intrigued by mountain grape growing.
It's good to know what you're into. Look what happens.
Right. I knew that's something that I really wanted to, because I felt really compelled by the wines, you know, from that side of the valley, from the east side of the valley, but also from the west side of the valley, you know, Mount Veeder, you know, Spring Mountain, Diamond Mountain, Howell Mountain. So I was just intrigued by mountain growing and the concentration and the depth of flavors that you could get specifically from the mountains, I would say.
Well, I mean,
I was considering working at Kane over in on Spring Mountain, and I was considering and I had another friend who was working at another winery on Spring Mountain. So I was just intrigued by those wines, I guess, just getting out of school. So I wanted to try to focus on that, you know, kind of how I focused on the sparkling exclusively, you know, the year before.
Yeah.
And to try to figure out, you know, which wines really got. And in doing so, and working up at Colgan, I also got to work with some amazing Syrah that same year from the estate, the number 9 estate of Syrah. And that wine threw me for a loop, and was maybe the second experience that I had with Rhone varieties that made me decide that I wanted to make Rhone varieties for myself.
It was that powerful an experience.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I thought one of the best wines we made the whole year, you know, we made a couple of wines that, you know, some critics gave 100 points. But I thought, though, one of the wines that, out of all the wines we made up at Colgan that year, the Syrah is the most compelling for me.
That's really interesting, because clearly this is, you know, blue chip winery. Even though it wasn't known as such at the time, there was enough evidence, and you just pointed to the 100 point scores.
Yeah. I mean, the Cabernet was fantastic. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I mean, all the Cabernet we made up there was fantastic. But it was the Syrah that, I mean, I remember it fermenting and it just smelling like, you know, really spicy olive oil and having a lot of freshness and, you know, good acidity
and tension
and like some smokiness that was coming out. So, I mean, it was just, it was fascinating. It was one of those just aha, like, holy smokes, like I didn't know wine could be like this type of moments. And I had one of those types of moments, you know, when I was still at school. I mean, there was a tasting that we did on campus called Rhones Around the World. You know, there was a Spanish Garnacha in the tasting. There was a, you know, I think there was a St. Joseph. There was a domestic, you know, Paso Robles blend. And then there was like a Chateauneuf du Pape, and then Australian Shiraz. And it was so going back to school, it was that tasting where it kind of dispelled my worries that terroir was just a marketing gimmick, right?
Like, so you got your proof of concept.
Exactly. It was like, okay, the same genetic material, wildly different results. I need to explain, you know, I need to, there's really something to this. And I remember, and then it was at that internship after graduating, where I was like, you know, we made that Syrah alongside the Cabernet, and I was like, wow, this
really
compelling, compelling wine.
Very cool. So how long were you at Colgan?
Just a season.
One season, but that was enough.
It was enough. I learned a lot, worked really hard. And after that internship, one of my buddy's older brothers, in fact, my roommates at Davis's older brother, Sam Baxter, I got a hold of him. I was actually planning on traveling and doing some travel after that internship, but he offered me an assistant winemaking position.
Very cool.
Up on Spring Mountain, up at Terra Valentine, and instead of traveling, I decided to take the position.
Yeah.
And again, that was a good decision because they had a lot of trust in me to. At a young age to, have a lot of responsibility.
And absolutely.
I really had to prove myself, that I could handle it. And we made a lot of wine. Not only were we making wines for Terra Valentine, but we're also custom crushing for...
Yep. Always helpful for experience.
Oh, yeah. And I got to work for Andy Erickson. He was custom crushing a bunch of his wines there at the time. Craig Becker, who is now at Summerston, was custom crushing a bunch of his wines there. So I got to continue, being... mentored, not just by Sam, but by a bunch of people and
good company,
and just kind of just learning, trial by fire, okay, here is this really complicated project, prove yourself. And it was and I was hungry to do that.
Of course.
And we made a lot of great wines. Spent a couple years there at Terra Valentine. I learned a lot and gained a lot of confidence in myself and, that I could, put my nose to the grindstone and really, have some really good things to show for it. We made some great wines those years. So, amazing experience, there was an enologist, but, as the assistant winemaker, it was just, for a small thing like that, you had to wear a bunch of different hats.
I bet. No, I mean, this is ideal.
Right.
Environment. So what happened next?
So I was there at Terra Valentine for a couple of years. And then Michelle, who was the assistant winemaker at Colgan, she decided to take a head winemaking position at Cliff Lady Vineyards in Stag's Leap.
Oh, wow.
And then when she took that position, she called me up and she was like, hey, we made a bunch of really good wines at Colgan in 02. Let's, come and work with me in Stag's Leap.
Very cool.
And I did. Yeah, I spent my next 8 years there at Cliff Lady, which was amazing.
I bet.
So the very first project I had, after I started at Cliff Lady was to finish a bunch of sparkling wine because Cliff had purchased the winery from S. Anderson Winery. They were making sparkling wine before Cliff bought the property. And one of the first deals was to finish a bunch of sparkling wine. I was like, oh, well, I get to use what I learned at J Wine Company.
Serendipitous.
Yeah, so we finished, we hand riddled, we finished a bunch of small lot, late disgorged wines, Blanc de Blanc, Blanc de Noir, Brut. There was a sparkling Shiraz to finish. They were having a lot of fun.
Well, making those wines. Those wines. I'm like,
they don't exist anymore, as far as I know. I'm sure there's in someone's cellar somewhere, but a lot of them were really great wines.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. We got to finish all of those wines, and which is fascinating. And then be involved with the replanting of the whole property as well as building of the winery at the property and caves and
soup to nuts.
Yeah, just you know, like Cliff, when Cliff bought the property, you know, he made a, you know, an amazing commitment to really maximize what he had there, and he's obviously done an amazing job.
Oh yes, no, he's definitely
over the years
a force.
Yeah, oh yeah, nice. No, he was fantastic, and again, got to learn all sorts of new pieces of the business, and
of course.
Continue to you know, grow under Michelle's watch, but also after she left, you know, eventually becoming the associate winemaker and winemaker.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, you know, working with Philippe Melka as the consultant there. So, I again just kind of continuing my my learning, just kind of sponging everything in. You know, the Abreu wines were also made right next door, and I got to talk to Brad on a regular basis over there. So, you know, Cliff was buying more fruit from David Abreu during the time that I was there than anyone else in the valley. So I got to work with a lot of amazing fruit and amazing people.
You know, this sounds really extraordinary. You're naming who's who. David Abreu, you know, probably still to this day is the most famous vineyard manager in the valley.
Yeah, yeah, he has, and he has been for a long time. So it was just amazing to, you know, see him on a regular basis, talk with his winemaker Brad on a regular basis, and just be in that environment and just kind of soak it all in and learn and grow.
It doesn't get any better than this. In your profession, this is it.
It was amazing, and I got to, again, I just can't say thank you enough to all the people who, you know, who have helped me, you know, along the way, and taught me the things to do, to not do, to you know, what the important things are about our craft. Including Cliff, you know, he was fantastic to work for. I mean, you know, in 2008, while I was still the assistant winemaker there, he gave me an opportunity to make my own wines.
How generous is that? You know, because a lot of contracts in professional environments, you know,
right,
that's could be perceived as conflict of interest, right? So
absolutely.
But winemaking community, which is what you just highlighted a moment ago, is so generous in
absolutely
in sharing and such like that, both on the production side but also on the vintner side.
Right.
This is a person that invested a tremendous fortune into Stagsley property,
mm-hmm,
and clearly, you know, in production and you, and he says, hey, go make your own wine, go fly, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, it was we had a sit down, and he was like, you know, Kale, what are your long-term goals in this industry? You know,
yeah,
what do you want to do? And, you know, at the time, I'd been an assistant winemaker for a while. I was, you know, approached by a few other people about being their head winemakers, and I was just kind of mulling these things over, and I think maybe he knew this, but he asked me, you know, what were my long-term goals? And I was like, well, you know, eventually making my own wine under my own brand, you know,
yeah,
creatively, that would, you know, be really fulfilling.
Hmm.
So he says to me, this was in 2008, that I could, as long as I got all of my permits and my licenses and everything,
yeah,
I did everything above the books, there needed to be a transaction. He charged me a penny per year to crush my own wine, you know, and it was a new winery, so there was a little bit of extra space,
mm-hmm,
in the back of the cave. You can make your own wine on your own time, you know, in the back of the cave, and you, as long as everything is above the board, you know, go be creative. And
that's so cool.
The conclusion of this interview can be found in the next podcast, already available for your download. Thanks again for tuning in to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson.